Good evening and welcome to Radio Alchemy, where we fuse the fringe with conventional wisdom. In the sunshine and the prayer. From secret societies to out-of-body experiences, black budget technology to this new world disorder, we want you to join us each week as we look at this thing called life with all the pieces. And on tonight's show, darling, the author of Tales from the Time Loop, The Biggest Secret, Children of the Matrix, Alice in Wonderland, and the World Trade Center Disaster, amongst many, many titles, a prolific author, internationally renowned speaker. He is going to be in town June 19th. That's right, Saturday, June 19th of 2004 at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. Do you know that place holds 3,000 people? Could you imagine 3,000 of your like-minded compadres getting together for a brain bake of an enormous scale, darlings? And he is on a five-city, two-country tour, taking him from Maui, Los Angeles, New York, Australia, Atlanta. But he's coming to Los Angeles June 19th. The theme of this tour, the world is in our hands. Yes, darlings, and the gentleman I'm speaking about is no other than David Icke, loves. Yes, he has been with us before, but he is going to be with us in flesh, as I mentioned before, June 19th. It is an all-day event from 9:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Oh, my God, it's like camp. You know, bring comfortable clothes, bring snacks, and sit down and get ready to for a tour de force, a tour de grande. And without further ado, let me introduce David Icke to you, darlings of Radio Alchemy. In the background, we are playing the band, which is going to be performing at the David Icke event on June 19th, Lost at Last. We're going to be featuring their featuring their music throughout the program. They're very fun. You're going to hear them a lot on Radio Alchemy. Very cool. Lost at Last is also going to be performing. We're going to feature their music. But now, hello. Let's welcome David Icke, who is on the big island of Kona right now. Well, Mr. Icke, I would say that the big island of Kona is definitely the place to recharge your batteries for this tour de force that you're doing, eh?
Yeah, I discovered it by accident, actually, because I was in Maui and got an invitation to come and stay here, and it's an incredible place. I mean, just the climate alone. I mean, part of the island I'm on, it rains and the sun comes out about every 10 minutes, and it's just incredibly lush, and there's a wonderful energy here and a lot of very nice people, so it's been a great bit of good fortune to find myself here at this time. It's
oh, yes.
A terrific place.
You know, it doesn't seem that there's ever a bad time for that place, right? I mean, even though you have the rain and then you have the sun, it's like that tropic weather just envelops you in a kind of blanket of warmness, eh? I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's lovely. Like I say, the energy is great. And it's also a place where you can take a breather and another look at yourself and life, really. Because, you know, the system that I've been exposing all these years is designed to keep us in the words of one document, busy, 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 back on the farm with the other animals.
Mm-hmm.
We have a situation where I meet people in America who are doing three jobs to maintain a lifestyle that used to be maintained by one.
Yes.
And while we're literally battling to survive, we miss taking, a breath, a step back, and seeing beyond the day-to-day battle for survival, so that the whole system's set up to stop us having quiet moments, to stop us having moments of peace where we can feel and see beyond the illusion that we call five sense reality. So it's all part of that, and this is a place where you can do that. And it's from this space that you can see why people in general don't go into these spaces beyond the five-sense chatterbox mind. It's because that's always being activated and stimulated by the system. I mean, if you look at society in general, it's just a massive five-sense stimulation of attracting the five senses, stimulating the five senses drawing us into that reality all the time. It's we're being enticed by things through our hearing, through our smell, through our taste, through our sight. And like I said, this is a place where you can just take a step back, take a breath, and actually see and feel beyond that crazy 1,000-mile-an-hour life that is called life on Earth.
Right.
In the West, anyway.
Yes, yes. Hmm. And so when you have a moment then when you take that breather like you are now, what does it come to you? What comes to you?
Well, you know, my whole life, to be honest, is moving in the direction of entering a space beyond thought. You know, I've been saying for years, you know, we need to think for ourselves. That's the first step,
mm-hmm.
because the vast majority of people, because of the way the system is set up, are allowing other forces to think for them. You know, people don't question, to a very large extent, don't question the official version of events. They don't question the official version of life, who we are and the nature of reality, the nature of who we are as people. They just take what they're told through life to be what they should think. So the first step is thinking for yourself, and it's starting to question, starting to look at the official story of everything and say, well, hold on a minute, does it stand up? Does it make sense to me? Is it my truth, you know, my individual truth, rather than someone else's off the shelf? And then you move into another space, which is where I've been moving for some time now, and that is beyond thought. It's a place where you don't think, you just know, where you don't have to create a personality for yourself. You just are. It's a space beyond the chatterbox mind, where things just are. If you haven't been there, if people haven't been there, it's very difficult to put it into words. But it's a place of knowing. It's a place where the intuition is king rather than the logical mind. And it's a completely different lifestyle. It's a completely different way of viewing reality. And that's where I'm going now. And I'm not completely there yet, which is why I'm... you know, in that middle ground, moving there, and but it's the way I want to go and the direction I want to go, and it's taking me in terms of the conspiracy that I've been writing and exposing all these years. It's taking me into another level of it where I can see why society is structured the way it is. It's structured to stop us getting into that level of being rather than doing, getting us into that level of knowing rather than thinking, logical thought. Because if they can hold us in the five senses, then they hold us in a tiny fraction of the infinite consciousness we really are. And we become manipulatable, we become controllable. Because, if you like, we are in this world, and we are of it when we are caught in the headlights of the five senses. When you move through thinking for yourself into non-thought, into being, into knowing, suddenly the ability to manipulate you is extremely difficult, if not nigh on impossible, because you are seeing through what is coming towards you as information. You don't even have to, in the end, research to see that what you're being told is not right. You feel it. You know it without, you know, going around the internet and even checking facts. This is the way that more and more people are moving and understanding that if we get into that space, there's no need for a revolution. There's no need for stockpiling weapons that bring down the Illuminati. You move beyond the space that they are controlling and manipulating, and this is the revolution. It's moving beyond the five-sense prison.
Well,
Not that there's anything wrong with the five senses and experiencing the five senses and enjoying the five senses, but if we get caught in there as our entire being, as our entire reality, then we are going to be pawns in a game, because the five sense reality is the home ground, the home stadium of this network of manipulation that I'm talking about.
So, you know, there have been great teachers of the traditions of transcendental meditation. We have Tibet Buddhism, lots that try and bring you, in a sense, to avoid. That tradition of meditation and silence has been, let's say, has gone around the world and infiltrated all different societies and bringing to mind the greatness of silence, the greatness of reflection. What is it necessarily about today and this here that, let's say, those that have been into the tradition of meditation and silence that now they are coming to understand what is so immensely valuable about it? They knew it was valuable before, but it seems like you're hitting an insight as to why that is so valuable. Even though people have been meditating for a long time, it still hasn't, in a sense, brought about the necessarily pole shift that we need in conscious reflection. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think if you look back through what we call history, all the if you like enlightened people have been talking about simple truth, that everything is one infinite consciousness. There is just one consciousness, and we are all not just expressions of it. We are that consciousness. As I've said before, it's like droplets of water in an ocean. You can hold a droplet in your hand and it appears to be individual. But if you drop the droplet in the ocean, where's the droplet end and the ocean start? The droplet becomes the ocean. So we are the ocean, not just expressions of it. And what has happened in this world of manipulation, this matrix, which I'm sure we'll get into, is that we have been manipulated to not disconnect from the ocean. That is not possible. We are always one infinite consciousness. But to believe that we are disconnected in the sense that there is no one consciousness, there's just us as individuals, and there's empty space between me and the next person, which, you know, even physics will confirm is simply not correct. There is no empty space between anything. It's all vibrating energy at different frequencies. And so this sense of disconnection, this amnesia of who we actually are, one infinite consciousness, and everything is that one consciousness in different forms, has meant that we live what we believe, and that is disconnection, what we call duality. It's been fascinating over the last 18 months for me to both go into other states of awareness, if you like, and experience this oneness, which is just unbelievable bliss.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place where you're still self-aware, in a sense, but you are also everything else. Mm-hmm. There is no point where you end and everything else starts. And to view this five-sense reality from that point, and to understand it more deeply, therefore, why and how people are manipulated. And the greatest way that we're manipulated is through our beliefs. I think Descartes once said, "I think, therefore I am." What it is in this manipulated world is, "I believe, therefore I am." And if you look at research, psychological research and other scientific research, it's very clear that all the time we are manifesting our belief. Our belief in what is real becomes our experience in what is real. Basic experimentation has shown that information that enters the brain is massively edited before it hits the visual cortex, where this three-dimensional world we think is around us, that's the only place it exists in that form, is in the visual cortex in the brain. Before it reaches, as it passes through the brain, information is massively edited, and it's edited on the basis of belief. Some researchers found that up to 50% and more of the information that enters the brain through the eyes is changed in terms of detail. Stuff is taken out that is there, stuff is put in that isn't there, before it hits the visual cortex and becomes the reality people think is around them. And that editing takes place on the person's belief. And so if you can get someone to believe something, then they will edit their reality and therefore their experience on the basis of that belief. It's like a stage hypnotist implanting a belief into the subject that there's the woman next to him is naked, or there's a giraffe in the audience, or what, they're eating a potato, but actually it's really an apple.
Right.
So it tastes to them like an apple, and the audience are laughing because there's this guy eating a potato, thinking it's an apple and enjoying it, right?
Right.
And what's happening, therefore, is that the hypnotist is implanting a belief in reality, and the subject is editing their reality on the basis of that belief. To that person, it really does taste like an apple. There really is someone naked next to them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an interesting thing because, you know, the global population is basically hypnotized. It's hypnotized by a belief in reality. And so when you say to them, hey, this reality is not correct in the sense that here's some information that challenges what you believe, they often don't see it because their beliefs edit that information to fit their belief. In other words, oh, it's a load of rubbish, can't be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like telling the guy eating the potato, thinking it's an apple, that actually his apple's a potato. Or something, it's a bloody stupid, it tastes like an apple. You're mad.
Right.
And so what we're looking at is not, in effect, learning anything new particularly. Not going anywhere new, because we always are the one consciousness. But removing the beliefs that disconnect us from an understanding of who we actually are. It's the beliefs that get in the way. So what's happening all the time is through what we laughingly call the education system, through
yes.
the mainstream media, through peer pressure of parents and staff who are giving us a version of reality which they're getting through their education and through their media and all that stuff, we have a situation where, not least through the hypnotist in the corner of the room, the television, where people from cradle to grave are being given implanted beliefs in reality all the time. And if we take on those beliefs, we are going to edit reality to fit. So the revolution of change, turning the prison into the paradise, is simply removing, purging ourselves of implanted beliefs in reality, and moving into a point of being where we start to be the governor of our reality rather than external implanted beliefs. And the reason that, if you look at basic information, 99% of what most people believe can be shown to be not true. And the reason is we are being sold this false reality all the time. Not least, you are an individual you have no power. You are ordinary. You are powerless. You're just the man in the street. All these things are given to us, all these implanted beliefs. You'll never do anything with your life because, mm-hmm. You're from the working class. You're never going to be up there. And also, then there's the up there. We are implanted with the belief that to succeed in life, you need the external trappings of that success. And that is what success is. It's the big car. It's the big house. It's the massive bank account. It's all these material trinkets. Now, there's nothing wrong with them if you want to enjoy them and all this stuff. It's when they become it and there's nothing else. And we're in a situation where people want to feel successful. They want to be appreciated. They want to be respected. They want to be admired and all this stuff. Lots of people do. Now, if we are not within ourselves in a space where we are getting that self-security from ourselves, that sense of self from ourselves, that sense of we're all right, we don't need external confirmation that we're all right people. We are all right people. We know that within ourselves. If we don't have that inner sense of self, then what we do is we are looking outside for it. And to do that, to draw that appreciation and oh, he's successful towards us, we need in this society, we think, to manifest those things that are considered successful. So we chase the bigger car and the bigger house and the bigger bank account all the time, because that will, we think, will draw to us the attention or the reaction from people that we're looking for. In other words, those things are helping us to get confirmation of ourselves, our sense of self, our sense of self-security and self-worth, not from within ourselves, from outside of ourselves. And the system is trying to sell that version of success all the time. And of course, America is a wonderful global example of it, chasing the material dream.
Absolutely.
And one of the reasons, I think, I don't know whether you feel this, that so many people now in America are becoming open to this, is that they've had the chance to go down the material road.
Absolutely.
A lot of the emerging countries are still buying the fact, because they haven't been down it, they're still buying the fact that is the road to happiness. That is the road to you know, the yellow brick road. But in America, they've had the chance to go down there, and increasingly large numbers of Americans are saying, hey, I've been there, and it don't bring what we were told it brought.
David,
and therefore, this is a great country now for this spiritual revolution to emerge.
Absolutely. Let me remind folks, love, who we are speaking with, David Icke. We are reaching him in Kona. Yes, it's not only a fantastic coffee, but it actually comes from a place, a little paradise out in the Pacific. He's going to be in town on June 19th, and you will hear more about this as we continue our discussion with David Icke right after this break. Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
Backgrounds, Darlene, from Native Soul Productions. The band is called Lost at Last. Kind of cool, right? Kind of like very much folds into what tonight's guest is speaking about, David Icke. He's going to be in town June 19th. Going to be talking at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. It's not going to be very civil that day. I think people are really going to get pissed off. And it's about time for all of that. And Lost at Last is going to be the closing night entertainment. So you get to take all of that amazing energy that you're going to build up from the talk and transfer it into some great whirling dervish dancing on the floor. David, as we were before the break, you were talking about this spoon-fed existence, overstimulation. When you look at something called the Internet and the information age, it really seems that it has a double-edged sword. One is that you get to know everything. I mean, look at the research that you've done. Look at how many sources. It gives you all this information. And then the flip side is that you implode underneath the responsibility to know it all. And I think that kind of closes people down, or it's a weird effect. Tell me what you think about the oversaturation point of the Internet.
Well, when you go into information overload, you obviously switch off. I mean, I've been there a few times.
I bet.
To rest your mind. But
right.
I think the Internet, funnily enough, is a tremendous analogy for the way that I'm more and more understanding the nature of this reality operates, what has become known as the Matrix.
Yes.
In the last 18 months, 2 years, this is where my focus has more and more moved to the question of what is this reality, and what is the force that's ultimately manipulating it? All the time that I've moved through this period, it's become clearer and clearer that particularly the first Matrix movie was the most accurate portrayal of the dream world that we live in that I've ever come across. I mean, it was just so right on.
Stunning. Wasn't it amazing when that came out? That almost started, I mean, it really started a revolution, and they really squashed it in the second and third one. But the first one was, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, that was just so right on. And
yeah.
And all the information that I come across, whether it's going into other states of reality or looking at it in the five-sense world through that kind of research, is underpinning the fact that that movie was so accurate. Instead of a computer-generated dream world, which the movie portrayed, we live in a mind-generated dream world. And about 15 months or so now, I went to the Amazon rainforest, and I took a psychoactive plant drug called ayahuasca, which took me into this dreamland world over two nights for hours and hours and hours. And during that period, a very clear voice, which took a female form, spoke to me in very profound detail about the nature of reality and how we create it. And it was talking about the fact that we live in a massive thought form, which is sentient. And this is what we call the Matrix. And it was talking about the fact, and indeed, you know, more and more of the research confirms this, that there is no out there. Like, I'm sitting in this room now, and it appears to be out there. It seems to be around me. But in fact, it's inside of me. It is a holographic projection, which I think is around me, and appears to be around me. But like I said earlier, the only place that it exists is actually in the visual cortex in the brain. It's inside me, not outside of me. And then comes the question, a very legitimate one. Well, okay, I can follow that, but to an extent. But how come we all see now the same, if they were here with me now, the same trees, the same car parked outside, the same room? How come?
Right.
And the more that I understand this, you know, in The Matrix, when they had to get that plug in the back of the neck,
yes,
before they could enter The Matrix?
Yes.
What it appears to be is that this, and I've talked to people, indeed I've seen it, I've seen The Matrix in other states of consciousness. It takes the appearance of like a grid. And it was very well portrayed in the movie as the moving figures and numbers, the green figures and numbers.
Right.
It's like a grid. And I funnily enough, I was talking over in Atlanta a few months ago, and I met Danyon Brinkley. You know, Danyon has had the near death experiences and gone out there, and he was telling me, yeah, he went on one or two of his near death experiences. He'd seen The Matrix, and it took a grid type form in the way that he viewed it. And it's the brain is a frequency decoder. It's interesting that something called Fourier transforms, discovered by a guy called Fourier, hence the name,
right,
is the mathematical sequence, if you like,
right,
that allows us to have television. It allows us to take pictures with a camera, turn those pictures into a waveform, a frequency, broadcast that as a frequency, and then the television, et cetera, and that kind of technology decodes that frequency back into pictures. And what they found is that the brain works on Fourier transforms. And so the brain is a frequency decoder. So all the time we are receiving frequencies, and the brain is turning them into a holographic reality. It's just like when you create holograms, you fire part of the laser at a photographic print, and you take another half of the laser, and you deflect it across the subject, the person or the apple or whatever it is you want to portray.
Right.
And then you deflect that part of the laser, now holding the vibrational image of the subject, back onto the photographic print where it collides with the other half of the laser and creates what they call interference pattern.
Yes.
Now, when you look at a holographic print in that form, it's just a series of apparently meaningless wavy lines. But when you fire a laser at that print, suddenly, apparently miraculously, apparently three-dimensional holographic image appears in front of your eyes.
Yes.
And it appears to be occupying space, but it's actually just a projection of the frequency wave lines of the interference pattern. And so what the brain is doing is taking those frequencies that are fired at it and changing them, like a holographic print, if you like, into a three-dimensional image, which is just a hologram. See, the body is a hologram, like everything is a hologram. It's an illusory kind of holographic image. And one of the fantastic characteristics of the hologram is that every single part of the hologram contains a picture of the whole. If you cut up a holographic print and fire the laser at the four pieces, you don't get a quarter of the image. You get a quarter size version of the whole image. So everywhere in a hologram contains the whole. This is why alternative healing, whether it's reflexology, acupuncture, whatever, can find representations of the entire body in the ear, in
right.
the foot, in the toe, in
right.
the hand, in the colon,
right.
everywhere.
Right, right.
And this is why they can grow a whole body through cloning from a single cell. It's because every cell contains all the information contained in the whole because it's a hologram. And it seems that the question, how come, if this is all correct, that this reality only exists in our brain stroke mind, how come we are all seeing the same room when we're in it or the same car going past the door? It's because it seems that this matrix is broadcasting a frequency, a constant frequency, which it changes to give the illusion of the movement of time. And this collective frequency, what you might call, what Jung might have called the collective unconscious, the collective mind, is decoded by the brain to give us the background, the basic background to the world we think we're living in. And what the reason the internet analogy is so apt is because if you take our brains to be a computer, and the computers are connected to the internet.
Yes.
Now, suddenly, all the computers connected to the internet are, in effect, if you want to, you could say, experiencing the same reality.
Right.
They're on the same web. They're on the same net. Therefore, they have this consensus reality. They're all experiencing the same internet. Some can choose to go to a porn site. Some can choose to go to an enlightened spiritual site. Some can choose to go to a banking site. Some can choose to go to the sports site. But they're all doing it within the same collective reality because they're all plugged into the same collective worldwide web.
You know how you were talking about the brain as a computer? I've always found it really frustrating, and some of gone to some of these convergence technology conferences where it's computer science, biological sciences, and also computer programming, trying to merge biology and machines together. The cyborg thing. We are already cyborg. I bet you would agree with that in a lot of ways. But the thing is that the first nature, the brain, us. We were first. We, in a sense, if it is an internalized projection, I guess the question I'm getting to is, if this is, I'm sitting in the studio right now. It's, you know, it, I can pound on the counter and you guys can hear that. If this is, in a sense, a projection and we have somehow control over the, our initial thoughts, why is it that we have created something that is so heinous? We are the subject matter. This is our projection and we're having a feedback loop with it. But we, in a sense, are, creating or constantly, where did the negativity come in? To the creative process, into the thought. Are you saying is that where it's tapped in and the feedback of negativity comes into that? So you're talking about both the structure of it, the hardware of it, which is the Faraday frequency range. Persistence of vision must be the most incredible discovery in the world, being able to mimic movement through still frames. And, it, you know, what led to the explosion of film and television, 30 frames, 24 frames a second, that that brings movement in and brings you into that dream world. But so there's the facilities of it, and then there's its effects and us living in a life at this particular point. So shouldn't we have more control over our environment if it is a hologram and we control our thoughts and project them?
Well, that's the big question. We control our thoughts. Going back to how we were talking earlier in this chat, we are not controlling our thoughts. We let someone else control them. That's the whole thing. In terms of just briefly, I'm banging on the desk and it's solid. So
yeah.
You know, this is it. It can't be solid. It's impossible, as you well know. It's made you know what is apparently a solid table, and I've got one here.
Yeah, I hear it.
is apparently you know, solid, but it's made of atoms,
yes.
And atoms are as least solid as you could ever come across.
But couldn't it be that all of this exists simultaneously? Like you have a body, but you have a spirit, and wasn't your body that went on that excursion in the Brazil rainforest? It was your spirit, and you're inhabiting this body, so your body can be in this 3D environment, and your spirit can be in this 3D, but also somewhere else. Couldn't it all simultaneously exist?
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, I sometimes disappear up my own backside when I'm trying to get my head around this. But everything is happening in the same now.
Right.
And, you know, time is an illusion, and time is part of the control.
Right.
We appear to be passing from, you know, past to through present to future when there's only a now. That's all that exists. But in terms of the control and why we don't do something about it, I can only tell you what... this very clear voice talked to me for hours and hours, and it's proved to be so accurate with the passage of other research, said, and that was that this matrix was at one time a projection of thought, which was an experience, if you like. It was a realm of experience. But eventually, for whatever reason, this thought form, which, if put it this way, take the analogy of a cinema. The movie on the screen is dependent upon the projector projecting the image. Otherwise, the movie on the screen can't exist.
Right.
What I was told was that this matrix was a projection, a mind projection.
Yes.
A holographic projection. But at some point, it took on a form of sentience when it accessed a, if you like, independent source of energy to sustain it. And that energy was fear, human fear, and not just human fear, but all fear that operates in this realm of reality.
That's really cool.
And when this voice was telling me this, I was given a picture of that. Remember that Disney movie? I think it was called The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yes.
Where the guy wants to create I think it was a broom.
To clean up,
to clean up and help him do the chores that he didn't want to do. The sorcerer.
Right.
And he created this kind of person broom kind of creation to do all the chores for him. But then the creation started taking over. It started multiplying itself and took over the sorcerer's kind of life. And that's what I was shown while the voice was kind of telling me this. And it seems that this thought form that took on a sentience of itself and started to manipulate this reality to generate as much fear as possible to sustain itself. And the nature of the frequencies that were being accessed by us in the five sense world started to change, and therefore the holographic backdrop, the consensus kind of world we all kind of share and accept is real, started to change, and it went from quite positive to extremely negative in terms of much of what went on there. And what I was told was that that in the five sense world, what was created was described to me as a time loop, where we appear to be going from past to present to future, but it's actually just a loop of experience going round and round and round.
Oh, that's brilliant. You know, that old saying, nothing under the sun, you know, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, the thing that you start to realize, and it really just kind of started, oh, wow, so what's real anymore in any sense, is that at any point, the frequency projection of this reality, which we're decoding into holographic reality, can change history, because history is only what we think it is. I think George Orwell said in his book 1984, he who controls history controls the present, and he who controls the present controls the writing of history.
Absolutely.
Now, that's true within the five-sense world, within the Illuminati manipulation of history. Mm-hmm. To take out things it doesn't want people to know.
Yes.
But it's also, if you think that everything's happening in the now, then all this matrix has to do is change the reality that we're decoding, this collective reality, to a point where, for instance, historical finds are discovered. Well, are they been discovered from the so-called distant past? Well, hold on, there is no distant past. There's only the now. Or are they actually just changes in projection? So suddenly we think we've discovered something from the past, but actually it's just a projection now. I don't know if I'm disappearing up my backside here.
Well, you know what?
You can see the way, perhaps you can see the way I'm going.
Well, you know what? That is the great thing we're going to pick up on, because what you were talking about when you're talking about these artifacts and their significance, it has to do with the passage of civilizations and also it kind of bridges into religion with all of its symbology and artifacts and how that works within this matrix. And that's what we're going to come back, David, and talk about after this fantastic break. David Icke, darlings, isn't this fun? Wow. All right. He's going to be in town June 19th, love, all day, 9:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Is absolutely tremendous. We'll get information for you to go. You go to www.ike-media.com. That's ike-media.com. We'll be back after this break. Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
Man, the voices. Ah, they're heavenly. It's so good. It's so ethereal, but yes, so grounded. Lost at Last is the name of this band. It is produced by Native Soul Productions. They are going to be out at David Icke's event coming up on June 19th at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. Talking about that, David in town. He's kind of doing a tour de grace around the world, in a sense, but definitely coming on the west side to Maui, to Los Angeles, heading east to Australia, jumping off to Australia, and then back to Atlanta. Dang, well, that's all good. And David, let me ask you, I think it is extremely great timing that you are hitting the road this year. I mean, so this is really an amazing turning point with what's going on in the U.S., the realization of, you know, we need a new definition of what it is to be human, et cetera. But boy, do we need to, like, get something in gear. Is that kind of like the timing of why you are out touring now?
Well, I just follow my intuition. I follow my heart, if you like.
And, yeah.
I follow the flow of life.
Right.
And it's what I've followed for 15 years, and it's put me
good
in the right place at the right time so many times. There's no way I go against it now. but, you know, what this voice in Brazil told me is reflected by what is actually happening in the world and what you see as you travel around.
Hmm.
And that is that this oneness, this unity of all, that is the infinite one, is infusing itself in that form, in that there's a difference between oneness in awareness of itself and oneness that's not in awareness of itself.
Right.
We in this reality experience oneness that's not in awareness of itself. It's still oneness, but it's not aware of itself, so it experiences that reality, disconnection and, you know, duality and all this other stuff. Oneness and awareness of itself, which is a state of being that has to be experienced to be believed, is infusing itself into this matrix to break it up, to break up this false reality and transform it from a place of fear, from a place of imprisonment, to a place of paradise. Oneness experiencing itself in holographic the holographic form that we do. A massive, unbelievable transformation is going on, and it was said to me that while it appears that the war and the conflict and all these highly negative situations are getting worse, and they are, and rolling forward, and the control is rolling forward. Actually, what it said is we're watching something in its death throes, because. You made a good point earlier about the spirit and the five sense world existing simultaneously. When you move your point of attention,
right,
your point of consciousness, your point of awareness out of the five senses, beyond the walls of the matrix, the vibrational walls of the matrix, into that realm of oneness. It's basically like this. You've been sitting in a prison, and you've been sitting in a room in the middle of the prison.
Right.
There's a door in the room, but everyone else in the room is telling you, don't go through that door, right?
Right.
That's blasphemous. God wouldn't like it. That's all this stuff. Don't go there. Or don't go there because you'll get ridiculed, you'll get condemned, and all your mates will laugh at you. Don't go through that door. Bad news. I say, what, I'm going through the door then? I'll sit here. And everyone's telling you, there's no good, no reason to go through that door anyway. It doesn't lead anywhere.
Yeah.
Everything that exists is within this room, right? So just get on with it. You know, get a good job, get a good car, get a nice wife from a good family, and you'll be fine. That's what life's like here, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then more and more people are doing this, as you well know. you walk through the door, and you walk down the corridor, and it can be a very frightening place to start with, because it's what you've not experienced before.
Right.
But if you keep going and things start happening in your life and you don't like them very much, but what they are fantastic gifts, brilliantly disguised as your worst nightmare,
mm-hmm.
as you are being purged of the conditioned reality in that room you've just left.
Right.
You walk down the corridor, you walk outside, there's a big gate, you walk through there, you walk up the hill and you turn around. Mm-hmm. From that point of consciousness out there beyond the matrix,
right.
Out there in the realms of oneness, in the realms of unity, in the realms of who we and what we really are.
Right.
And you look back and you go, oh my God,
is this?
I've been sitting in a prison. Look at it. It's got walls. It's got glass on the top. I can see now how these guys run the prison.
Right.
And that's the point. When you reach that point, and it's opening your heart, but you can open your heart without sitting cross-legged on a mountain. You can do it in everyday life. That's the real trick.
Mm.
You open your heart, and you can move to that level. And suddenly you are in this world physically, in the sense that you are experiencing this holographic projection within the matrix, but you are not of that world anymore, because the point from which you're observing it is not within the matrix, within the prison. It's outside of it. So suddenly you're looking in from outside through your eyes, if you like.
Right, right, right.
And you therefore see the world around you in more and more clarity, with more and more clarity. And you see what you couldn't see before.
Yes.
And what we call this is an awakening. Now, what could you use to describe someone who is waking up from the hypnotic trance when the hypnotist clicks the fingers and says, wake up?
Yeah, it's kind of like being spanked, your first spanking right out of mom's womb.
You know? Are waking up to the reality that you are, but that you have been hypnotized to forget.
Right.
This is what's going on. People are being hypnotized to believe a false reality to hold them in the prison.
Now, I have to ask you this question before. We only have 4 minutes left. I've been dying to ask you this question. Now, this completely shatters what we know of any religion on this planet today, because you're talking about the all creating a thought form, materializing to us, and then a negative thought form, you know, somehow takes over and turns it negative. But then again, that just means that there isn't necessarily the very same hierarchies, that there is a God. You are talking about a thought and all, so there isn't the judgment, there isn't the guilt. It just is as a hologram. I mean, is that what you're getting to? Is that what do you see in religion? Because you've done so much looking into that too.
If you get into the more enlightened religions, and for me, I have a simple philosophy. If people can give a name to what they believe, then they're in the prison. Because if you can give a name to what you believe, you are already stuck in a belief system, because everything just is. We all just are.
Right. Yeah.
It's what I've called in Time Loop the force with no name.
Right.
So just by that giving God a name, or what you believe a name, you're already caught to a lesser or larger extent.
But doesn't that mean then that, I mean, that is the biggest trick in the book then, the idea that religion isn't there helping you towards your eternity. It is there to systematically cut you off from going through the very important door, which is understanding who you really are, that you're not a sinner necessarily, you know, in
now,
this
what,
way.
What it's doing, overwhelmingly, it is saying to you, Do as we tell you in
right.
this room.
Right.
And then when you die, you'll go through that door and you'll go to paradise if you've done what we said.
Right.
And if you haven't, then you'll go through that door to hell.
Yep.
So religion has always been a form of control within the five senses, within the holographic illusion. And it's about division. It's about often about conflict. Now, people can express their spirituality through a religion if they take the positive aspects of it and leave the rest behind.
Right.
But take Christianity. I mean, the God of the Bible, the Judeo-Christian Bible, is a schizophrenic. Isn't it?
I mean, delusions of grandeur.
He has this loving side, apparently, when it suits, and then he's absolutely vicious when it suits somewhere else. I mean, please. what are religions? They are belief systems.
Right.
They are selling a version of reality to people in the sense that, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Judaism, whether it's Islam, any of them, they're selling a reality.
Absolutely.
And with it comes the men in frocks and the hierarchy and all this stuff.
And kiss this ring and all of that.
It's just a transnational corporation. That's basically what it is, selling something. Instead of selling tins of beans, it's selling a belief system. And any belief system that says you will believe this or else, you are wrong, or else you are out of here, is a belief system that is not in any way aware of the infinity of all.
David, darling, do you know that hour went by so fast? It's so fun. It's so great to talk with you about this. Thank you. Thank you for coming to L.A. Thank you for being on this huge tour that you're doing. Your intuition, man, I'm telling you, people are going to start like going, boy, I want to talk to my intuition, too, because it's paying off
What changed my life is when I decided 15 years ago or more now, whenever my head said something and my intuition said another, I was going to go with my intuition.
There you go.
and that's what's done it. And your intuition can get yourself into some scrapes because it doesn't abide by the rules and regulations of this intellect-dominated reality.
Interesting.
But in the end, it always works out.
That's what it is, in the end, right? Hey, darlings, David Icke's going to be here in Southern California, in Pasadena, Saturday, June 19, 2004. And the fun drive's coming up for KPFK. And Raleigh Pohl, who is helping David come to L.A., has been so gracious in making a couple pairs of tickets available to help raise money for KPFK so we can continue to bring you this kind of radio, bringing you these kind of gents out there doing their good deeds, eh? So stay tuned for the second hour. The website to go to, www.ike-media.com. That's Ike, ICKE-media.com. Go there, get tickets. See you on the 19th, darlings. Okay. Stay tuned for the second hour of Radio Alchemy on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. Welcome back to